From racing.com and Top Sport, this is A Good Three with Dr. Turf, Matt Welsh and Paul Tatnall.
Hello and welcome to another episode of A Good Three. Turfy, it's AFL finals time. We're off to the G tomorrow night. How are the nerves?
Toey, but I think they'll win, but toey.
I just want to chat, bring Paul in at this juncture. So as we know, Paul,
avid Geelong.
Geelong supporter.
Yes.
He's so nervous he can't even go to the game on Saturday.
No, that's not the reason I'm not going, Matthew. You're being facetious here.
How can you not be going?
Well, I have a wife that works across a seven-day roster and kids who have obligations. I'll be honest, I'm not shattered to be missing it. I'm not feeling it. So
you guys finish top of
Geelong
the
Geelong supporters don't travel. Simple as that.
What do you mean they don't travel?
They don't travel.
We're going to start like this today, are we?
That's why the game's at 4:35 so they can get home in time. You know, get McDonald's on the way
Can I just bring this up quickly? They put it on during the regional Geelong grand final to clash. That's how little of the AFL cares about the grassroots football community. But let's move on.
Here we go.
He'll bang on about the fact they should have played in front of 12,000.
They should have.
HBA in a second. But anyway, enough of that. We've got an incredibly special guest on the podcast today. The world's greatest form analyst, Turfy. Trumps you and I's attempt on this podcast.
Low bar.
So far.
Low bar.
It's not funny.
He has more confidence. The listeners have more confidence in this man than any other tipster that's gone before him.
There's absolutely no doubt about that. I speak of none other than Dean Lester. And Dean, as I welcome you in, first thing I want to ask you, and it's probably not as serious as some of the questions we may ask as the show goes on.
Unlikely.
Listening to Friday Form Focus, as I do over a number of years, I know you're a massive Neighbours fan. How are you going in the post-Ramsay Street era?
Well, that's why I had to take a bit of time off work, maybe, to be honest, to recover. So we've come good though. So it's all okay now.
All right. Now you've unfortunately gone through some health battles over the last number of years, but you've been off the airwaves for probably 3 or 4 months recently. Just for the listeners at home, what have you been going through during that period?
I had back surgery. I had a displaced fracture in the T8 T9, and it just had to be stabilised, and then I had to go through a fair bit of rehab at the Caulfield Hospital. So that's where I've been over the last 13 weeks or so. But yeah, we're back in full function for the spring.
Back doing the form, Dino. I noticed behind you there's an array of winning photos, as most owners like to sort of display their great moments. There's no sporting photos of you there, Dino. And historically, too many people tell me what a fine sportsman you were, not just cricket, but also golf as well.
I was a precocious 2-year-old. I was trained by Cliffy Thaler. I'd well and truly finished by time about under 16's hit, but played a fair bit of cricket and golf.
Were you a Peninsula boy?
Days, but Peninsula, yeah.
So you didn't play cricket with Mick Malloy, did you? Because his career is... We're still talking about it.
Yeah, he's about he was about 2 years older than me. He was a prefect, Mick.
That is hard to believe.
Peninsula. But he was, and I played against him actually in club cricket because he played for Mount Eliza. He played with the Daddos, I think.
Yes, they were famous Peninsula family along with the Drain brothers.
Yes, Cameron and Andrew I played against, and I played for Coringle. So, I did play against them, and I didn't get to play with cricket with Mick at Peninsula.
Never felt like playing for the Pines?
I was just scared going to the Pines. I was happy I didn't get my bat stolen or my pad stolen. I was just happy to come out intact.
Dean, you've been in racing a long time. You've been on... Through the airwaves on RSN since I've been following racing. But how did you first get into the sport?
I didn't have much choice in it, Matty. I was born basically into a stud farm. Went home from birth to a stud farm where my parents ran a couple of stallions, and we had racehorses at the time. And Dad was a bit of a commission agent at the time for Angus Armanasco. So
he would have been busy.
He was. And they were successful too. They landed until they realised who he was, and then he had to get another bowler. So they got taken off the roster. So that's how I got into racing, just through the family. And as I said, playing sport as a junior, I probably got away from it for a bit, but it kept drawing me back in. And by the time I was 12 or 13, I was well and truly ensconced.
Dino, with my own sort of punting career, I was a bit of a mug, but I latched onto a professional punter. His name was John Duncan, who was, in my looking back on him, a genius. Was there anybody that guided you a little bit when you were sort of dipping your toe into the water of the punt?
Well, for my 14th birthday, I got the Don Scott books to read. So I didn't do much year eight study, but I did a lot of study of Don Scott's methodology.
Winning?
But once I sort of got going, I was going down, I started doing the track work for the Sporting Globe and for 3UZ, and I was seeing these terrific gallops, and then the horses were running sixth or seventh, so I wasn't getting the form right. Didn't matter how well they galloped, they weren't winning. So, I was lucky enough to be introduced to David Price, and David was probably the forerunner when, videos first started being studied. And I used to ring him nearly every day, probably drove him mad, but learned a lot off him, and he sort of shaped how I looked at form. And from there, my own methodology came into play, and sort of 30 years later, was still trying to get it right.
Dino, when it comes to, we see you on a Wednesday and a Saturday or Friday in RSN as well, provide those tips. How much work does it go behind the scenes to get you ready for a Saturday? How many videos and trials are we watching interstate racing? We see you on a Saturday give you these great pieces of advice, but how much work actually goes into getting to that position?
Oh, it's always, you're always working on it, Paul. I mean, you'll just be casually watching a race at a Chuka on a Thursday or something, and you'll see a horse win, or you'll see one flash home, you just make a little note of it and think, well, that's got a race in it or going forward. And I like to sort of try and read the minds of the trainers where they're going with horses, and you'll see a horse run fifth or sixth, and you think, well, next start it'll go 1400, it'll be Flemington, it'll be X sort of race. And if it lands in that race, straight away I'm interested. And then if the variables are right, like track conditions and barrier draws, jockeys, etc., then you get really interested. So that's sort of, I'm always working on sort of, formulating what I do, when you hear me Friday or Saturday.
Dino, for a young aspiring form analyst looking to get into the game, what's the bit of advice or two you'd give that person?
I think because we all love a punt, you can very easily, because you win on a horse, fall in love with it, or you get dirty on one when you lose on it, you can't sort of have that mindset if you're doing the form properly, because they're probably only one run away from, losing their form or turning it around. So you've got to try and pick that moment when that happens, or it's a bit like the know when to hold them, know when to fold them, get off a horse that's been winning at the right time, or conversely, chime in at the right time. So I think, watching for when horses are going to peak or drop off is the thing I look for, and I think that'd be the first thing you'd be trying to, study.
Dino, we had David Price on 2 or 3 weeks, and we asked him exactly that same question, and he said, what advice would you give a young punter? He said, don't. Mm-hmm. Don't go into the game. And partly driven by when you and I and Price were punting here in Melbourne, 80s and 90s and so forth, the markets we were betting into were far more competitive. We had a variety of prices. The markets were 107, 108, 110%. Now you're looking 125 and so forth. So it's a different world we're punting in these days. So for you to adapt, because we could make a market there, we could find horses that were over the odds on our own markets. It's devilishly difficult to do that on a regular basis now. So how have you adapted to the different markets you're betting into?
Turf, I think I think the markets are more competitive because of the class system of the horses. I think when I was, in my 20s and punting probably a bit more strongly, it was maidens class 1 to 6. And you could mark a horse that would get to class 3 and you could say, well, it's not going to win another race in Victoria. It doesn't matter where they go.
Yep.
And you'd see it, then you get shuffled off to North Queensland. So that was the end of its career in Victoria. But now with these ratings that they go up and down, they're only 2 or 3 runs away from getting into a race that they can win. So all of a sudden, you're getting wide markets, and I think that makes it incredibly difficult. And I think that the class system has a lot to make it to make it hard, you know, harder to win on the punt.
Dino, Jai McNeil paid particular tribute to you after his win on Twilight Payment in the Melbourne Cup a couple of years ago. You clearly had significant involvement in him getting that right and also the tactics employed on that day. What were the instructions you gave to Jai ahead of Twilight Payment's run in the Cup?
Nothing really, and I sort of relate my role in that regard to like a caddy, just reinforcing, you know, that, pick the right club and hit it well. I think between Lloyd Williams and Joseph O'Brien, they had a really good plan in place. And when Jai mentioned it to me on the Tuesday morning and was going through it, all I did was say, well, you know, you're going to have to be brave. That were the two words I used. And that was all. It was just a reinforcement. He knew what he had to do. He just had to then go and implement it.
Do you know, when I was a younger punter, I found a horse called Leilani winning a maiden at Bendigo, I think it was, and followed her all the way through a spring campaign, Turek Handicaps, Caulfield Cups, and placing in a Melbourne Cup. Is there a horse that you found in a maiden somewhere and you thought, I'm sticking with this? I don't know how far this thing's going, but it's going all the way.
Yeah, well, he was a bit of a horse that got on the rise, Turfy, and I did win a bit of money on him. And then probably the second half of his career, he just was laced with disappointment. It was a horse called Marble Halls. I saw him win at Werribee, his first start in Australia, and it was just the most incredible win. And I thought, well, he'll just keep winning. And he won through to Brisbane, and I absolutely loaded up in the Queensland Derby, and Yippee-I-O beat him. And then he went through the spring, and he was going along well, and then he ran into Might and Power. So he was a bit stiff there, but then he was in the wilderness for a long time, and then he won a tour at the golf, but I wasn't with him. But yeah, early days, I thought, well, this is the horse I want to be with.
He had a bad reputation at the end of his career, Dono. The other thing about, what about owning horses? And I'll bring a horse up because I was with you. I think we're at the Swan Hill Cup meeting 30-odd years ago. I reckon he had a horse called Go With The Flow. Might have been
That's
ridden
the
by Stevie.
In the background, Turfy.
Is it? Stevie Bella?
There.
Was he?
Stevie Bella.
He may have been a very big fat result for you, Dean Lester.
It was a very good result, Turfy. We did a breakfast at the Commercial Club Hotel, and I met Tony Leonard for the first time.
Yes, great friend of ours.
It was a very, very pleasant afternoon at the races.
Oh, come on! Wasn't there a double though? Was Go With The Flow part of a double as well? Horses that you owned that both won and may have paid for, I don't know, giving you some sort of financial security, Dean.
Yeah, put a roof over the head, Turf. Yes. No, the first one wasn't one I owned. It was one of Robbie Griffiths's called Soraya. And it was ironically the granddam of the quarterback. So that family's been very kind to me. But that day, Turfy, yeah, Soraya won at Sandown and Go With The Flow won the Country Cup later in the day. So it was... quite by chance that I had the all-up bet, Turf, because they were behind the barriers for Soraya's race, and I thought I'd had pretty much everything I could on her. And I put my hand in my pocket and found some more money, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to have an all-up of the two. And that was the icing on the cake.
Speaking of the quarterback, of course, he provided one of your greatest moments in racing, no doubt, winning the Group 1 Newmarket a couple of years ago and knocking off a handy horse in Chautauqua in the process.
Yeah, he beat Blackheart Bart and Chautauqua. It wasn't a bad finish. He was tremendous. He gave us a great ride winning that and the Gill Guy and running in a lot of Group 1s. He was a fantastic horse for many years. So, I owe him a lot. He's the Group 1 winner on the wall. So, he was terrific.
Dino, Matty Welsh loves to tell us how much he moves markets with his tipping advice, but I think it's generally accepted that no one quite moves markets like yourself. You're Emma Ruffy on RSN on a Friday morning. If you're not getting on in the next 20 minutes, by the time you park the car, the horse is shortened. Do you understand how much market power you have in your advice? And sometimes you sit back and chuckle that a horse has come right in and think now all that price is gone.
I don't quite chuckle, Paul. I get a bit nervous because I want them to win. It's a little bit overwhelming. And we got on a fair roll there about 3 years ago, where I think three of them won at $15 plus, and that created a bit of the movement in the markets. But it's a responsibility I take greatly. But I'd like one to lob and. in the next few weeks, it'd be good to get it going again.
I think it is just about the most promoted, most spruiked bet anywhere in the country. Dino, what's the best result you've had with the Ramaruffi?
I think, horse of was Hayes's, and then went to Matt Kamani's first run for him, won at $23. That was the Ramaruffi at Flemington. And Persan, he was $21 when we gave him out, and he ran $5 favourite. So I think they're the two best, and they both won.
The other thing about tipping I've found, and I've had tipping services over the years, some successful, some not so, but giving out your numbers, you're not telling people what to do. They can make what they will of the numbers you're giving them. I've had a tipping service where I had a staking plan as well, and that's one I didn't like, you know, because you're actually saying back A, back B, something on C each way, lay D, whatever. Does it ever sort of cross your mind the influence you're having on people and perhaps the position you might be putting them in having a bad run?
Yeah, exactly. And that's I'm with the staking plan one. That's the thing that I grapple with a lot. And I have it as a recommended, you know, spend on a given day. And if they want to take that recommended spend, well and good. And it's never excessive by any means. But as you said, this is the biggest thing. There's a huge difference between tipping and punting. You can be a really good tipster and a shocking punter, exhibit A here. But you don't know what people take out of your tips. So often, be at the races and someone will say, oh, thanks for that horse you put in for fourth. It got me the first four of the trifecta. And you sort of think, that's it. I didn't have the other numbers. They got them, but I've somehow helped them get a trifecta. So that's where, it's good and you don't know what they're going to take from your information. But the staking plan ones, I'm still working through that, and trying to finesse that all the time.
And so at your stage, you've been in the game a long time. Just judging by what you're saying, it sounds like you're still continually evolving the way you go about things and continually learning new things.
Absolutely. I think you've got to. I think with what's available and to streamline it and the amount of meetings and the amount of horses and trying to, standardise horses from different areas, you've got to be trying to be with the times. And in the last 10 years, the evolution of using a database that I got specifically designed for me, sectional times, standardised times, those sort of things, keeping a record of track conditions and track biases and rail positions and, mapping that sort of thing.
Is that all?
Is something that I wasn't doing 10 years ago.
It's funny with all of that, Dino, we all have access to data that we never had access to originally, and obviously everybody has access to that data now, but I still figure that watching a race with your mince pies, just watching tempos of racing and riding styles, you learn. No amount of data can ever tell you what your eyes tell you. You still sort of feel like that?
Yep, still the best turf, absolutely. And there's still that element. There's the equine desire element, a horse that wants to put in. Or
equine desire. What a great expression.
How riders ride.
That we have that problem with Turfy coming in on this podcast. Turf's desire each and every Thursday morning.
Can human be a, desire.
Always a low rating there.
A little bit hit and miss. Dean Witz, it's the first day of spring. The spring carnival's on our doorstep. Are there a couple of horses that you're really looking forward to and maybe a futures bet that might stand out at this stage?
Futures bet, no. Look, I'm really interested in Inspirational Girl on Saturday in the Fian. I've just got a feeling they might go down a handicap path with her and name it something like the Caulfield Cup, and she'll get in with a lightweight. And she's big odds. It might be a total waste of time, but I think she's around the 50-1 mark for Caulfield Cup, and I'll be interested to see how she goes Saturday because I think she's trialled well. And I just think Bob Peters has probably got the big mile races and that with other horses covered, and maybe the Cox Plate with Western Empire. So she might go down a different path.
Let's look to the Valley on Saturday, Dean. We've got you on as a guest, but we'd also like to find the listeners a few winners. Our multi hasn't been successful of late, so it's good we've called in an expert. Are there a couple you like at the Valley on Saturday?
couple. The one I like the most is in the last. I think Unusual Culture was in a race. It was everything on Wednesday, Sandown, and they scratched and probably landed in a pretty good race here from a good draw. I just think haven't really got the tactics right the last couple of runs. And from the draw, I just don't think that'll be a problem. Minimum weight with Jai McNeil on. I thought it was probably as good a hope as any on the day in race 9, number 15. And I think if he's going to go anywhere through the spring, Uncle Bryn is entitled to win the race before. But his run was good enough, I think, in the Lawrence at Wait for Age. And now he gets in a handicap. And if Ben Mellon wants to ride 54, he's been barely riding 57 of late. If he's riding 54, even if he rides half over, I'm happy to be with Uncle Bryn. So probably be coming home late in the day, Matty, with Uncle Bryn into Unusual Culture for me.
He was a super run first up in the Lawrence, and they threw him in the deep end there. Race not run to suit, got home strongly. Just a quick word on the two features, the Fian and also the McEwen. We've had small fields drawn together in both, Mr. Brightside and Even Money favourite, and then you've got Cool and Gather, the three-year-old filly, down on the 50 kilos, $2.30 favourite in the McEwen.
Yeah, well, I think that Mr. Brightside, obviously deserving of favouritism, but I've just mentioned that I'm looking forward to seeing Inspirational Girl. They've met three times. I think Mr. Brightside's 2-1 over her, but Inspirational Girl did win the Blaney Stakes when it was a slowly run race and a dash home, which might be the case in this race. So she could easily get Mr. Brightside. So don't really want to have a bet, but I think one of the two there. But I'm not that wrapped in the two-year-old crop from last year, turning three, with one exception, and that's Cool and Gather. I think she was just a bit immature to go right through from the Gold Coast to the
slipper.
Golden Slipper. She still ran really well in the Slipper, and I think her most recent jump out shows she's right on song. And again, Jamie Carr riding at 50 kilos just for a group two. I think she wants to secure this ride right through the spring.
All right, well, there's a few winners for Saturday. Dean, it's been absolutely outstanding having a chat to you. It's so good to hear your voice back on the airwaves. You're back full-time for the spring now, charging ahead, getting involved in RSN each Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, certainly Friday, Saturday, Sunday for me on RSN, Matty. So, I'll be full steam ahead for the spring.
Another three-day week. Well done.
It works like a
good
Trojan.
Good to hear you're gainfully employed too, Turf. That's good to hear.
It's on a contract basis, mate. Trust me, week to week.
Dean, he's about to head out for a game of golf with a 19-year-old professional skateboarder. Would you believe? And that is not a word of a lie.
Yes, I am. Keegan Palmer, his name. He's an Olympic gold medalist. And what the hell I'm going to talk to him about? I've no idea.
All right, Dean.
A bit of hip hop, maybe. Dino, is that your favourite music genre?
Just hasn't quite come across my desk yet, Turfy. I stopped at about 80s and 90s, I think. That was good enough for me, and I thought, well, I've heard enough, that'll do. I hope you enjoyed the hip-hop chat. You can always find something on a golf course to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
I'm going to introduce him to betting on golf. Don't worry about that.
Tell him about all the stables you've been in over the journey, Turf. You've been in more stables than Stylish Century, so that'll get you around 18 holes.
This is something we might need to discuss on next week's podcast.
He's being flippant about some of my sackings from media venues over the years.
Of course, yes.
I'm
working on another one at the moment.
There is a podcast, The Age or The Herald Sun does a podcast called Sacked.
They do, yes.
You could probably get a guess.
Thank you. Let's move on.
Yeah, all right. All right, Dean, as I said, thank you so much for making the time. Great to hear you back on the airwaves. Look forward to a big spring. Best of luck on the weekend.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Good on you, Dino.
Having a bet on the racing this week? Top this.
With Top Sport's best of the best multis, top odds are guaranteed. Place a best of the best multi during Saturday Metro meetings for the top flug or dividend from the best three national totes. Plus, there's best of the best to win up to $5,000 too.
Top that. Download the app today. Top Sport. Feel the excitement.
Don't let the game play you. Stay in control. Gamble responsibly.
An early look.
Well, Terfie, we're back at the Valley on Saturday. We were there a couple of weeks ago. Yes. The rail was out five metres.
It was three the start of the meeting before, so we've had three and then five.
Now we're back to the true.
What does that tell you? Come on, Pythagoras, do the maths.
I don't need to be Pythagoras. I think my four-year-old could work that out. The inside ground's going to be unmarked. The inside 2 metres. Sal listens to this podcast, so no. No, he, of course he doesn't.
Yeah, no, none of my kids. Oh, my they bet on footy.
he doesn't mind getting on my back and pretending he's a jockey, though.
Really?
Yeah.
See, are you allowed, do you allow him to pull the persuader? Because you're not a big fan of the whip, are you?
He did the other day. I think my wife nearly died of shock when she saw it. But anyway, let's get back to the Valley on Saturday. So you'd think up on speed, close to the rail.
Common sense tells you, particularly very wide, where it's been 3 and 5, so I can't see them. I can't see them making ground 5, 6, 7 wide up the side there like they can do sometimes. And even they've had gallops out there as well. And I've told you about how the Tabaray protects some of that section of the track from the afternoon sun.
It does.
So common sense just tells you it's going to be on pace.
And it sounds like they're struggling to get the track to dry. We're going to be in the soft.
Well,
rain.
You know, it's been so gloomy in Melbourne. I mean, I know it hasn't. It's, I mean, there's been rain, which is okay, but there's been no sunlight.
It's a dark place sometimes.
Anyway, let's not go down the Weather Bureau track path.
Today is the first day of spring, though, isn't it?
It certainly is, and spring is in the air, and you've got a Group 2 race. In fact, you've got two Group 2s, both named after famous administrators.
Oh, here we go. Isn't this a contenders segment?
Well, no, but I think we need deference sometimes because young people, I bet you no one, none of your mates would know who John F. Feehan was, and they certainly wouldn't know who Ian McEwan was, who I had the pleasure of working with.
CEO, former CEO.
For CEO of Moonee Valley. He was a Kiwi, which was controversial in itself, and then he came over here and took a CEO's job. And he really did put Moonee Valley on the map. He was a very aggressive marketer when marketing, sports marketing wasn't that big, particularly in racing. And, you know, he helped the Cox Plate attain its position because it was, people are surprised when I say this, it was second fiddle to the Moonee Valley Gold Cup. The Moonee Valley Gold Cup was the feature race.
Yeah.
For decades. The other thing, great thing he did, he only had 2 track readings at Moonee because in those days he did the track readings. There was no stewards. It was Ian McEwan. It was track good or it was meeting abandoned. There was nothing in between.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Dear
Omar. And he's rightfully got this sprint race. It's only been around 20-odd years, this sprint race, but he's got this good sprint race.
It's a fascinating contest.
Both races have got small fields.
The Feehan Stakes fields are touch underwhelming.
It's very
Let's start with the Feehan
It's very
Stakes.
Underwhelming, but there's still some interest
there in it. So it's a mile contest. It's a Group 2 race. It gives a golden ticket into the Cox Plate.
Of which only one horse has ever completed the double.
Mr. Brightside's favourite this year.
Who?
I don't know. You're going to tell me.
El Segundo.
El Segundo. Trained by Colin Little. Yes. Terrific horse.
By Pins. Out of Palos Verdes. He was a very good mare. The thing about, I don't think Mr. Brightside wants to lead, but I can't see.
Earlswood surely is the other one who could lead.
Well, yeah, we were talking about him last night as weather first up, coming back from an injury. Will they want to lead on him first up?
Gee, he had a soft trial.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen him have a stronger trial because I reckon he could have gone close to knocking off the favourite if he's fully wound up. Yeah.
If he leads and allows Craig Williams to control the race sitting outside him, I think it makes Mr. Brightside a moral. Spanish Mission's interesting. I can't imagine him being wound up, but he has to deliver this preparation. He has to sort of...
I heard Peter Moody say he might go second up into a Melbourne Cup off this.
Yep. Well, he ran first up in the Melbourne Cup when he ran third behind very elegant and incentivised last year.
That's off those European...
Coming off a European cap, and I understand that. Yeah. Yep. But he did run, and, you know, it's going to be interesting anyway.
And you got Inspirational Girl down the bottom. She goes better second up than first up.
Yeah, I wasn't jumping out about her jump outs.
Neither was I.
And she's being set on a Caulfield Cup path, so... I don't like her at all.
So even money...
And the old bugger Sound. He's just a terrific racehorse, but he's 1,000 to 1.
Even money, Mr. Brightside. Are you happy to take it? Want to wait and see? What would tip you into backing him? Because you sound pretty confident.
What would tip me backing it? I'm probably happy to stay out of a race like that. I think that's about the right price.
He's a good horse.
He's a very good horse. And look, he's what is he, 6 or 7 from 14? We haven't seen that. You know, we haven't found his limit yet either. Yeah. You know, if he, one thing you've observed about his career is that he's got better through each preparation as the preparation goes on. And
goes well wet and dry. Put himself up on pace, happy to sit off a couple.
Got a little turn of foot about him, and a lot of these haven't. So, you know, we'll see.
All right, that's Mr. Brightside.
Fascinating race. It's a really fascinating race.
He looks hard to beat. It's going to be, as you say, a fascinating little contest. Let's go into the McEwen Stakes, because this is a really interesting race for mine. You've got seven runners. Probably five of them like to settle somewhere right up on speed.
They do.
And then you've got two who just drop out the back. I would have thought the Inferno and Away Game drop out the back. Rothfire, on his day, he's electric early. In the Congo, likes to fly along. Zoo Style motored along in a recent trial.
This is in the Congo's first 1,000-metre run, by the way. So although he's seen...
He does look like a bit of a 1,000-metre horse.
Well, his jump outs, he was very fast in the two trials, I should say, that he had in Sydney. Coolangatta, there was an argument last night that she wouldn't lead Coolangatta. But with 50 kegs...
Oh, I think Jamie will sum it up beautifully. If something wants to kick up inside of her, I think she'll just sit outside the leader. But otherwise, I think with the 50, well,
Zoo Style goes quick. And Semillon, who was poor first up, but you can mount a case that he is a wet tracker, Semillon, and he gets in with 52. He might sit outside her and drive her mad.
The thing that might happen is if you had, like, I could see Jamie Carr letting Rothfire or Zoo Style kicking up underneath, and maybe in the Congo, who's drawn the widest of the seven,
takes the
ultimately comes across and leads them.
Ooh.
And then ends up. That's the other scenario I could see. It's just,
I can see. I thought in the Congo might stalk them.
Okay.
But anyway, look, it's a fascinating race, and you can make a cow. The Inferno won this last year, of course.
He was second up then, wasn't he?
But it was a slower run. Yeah, he'd run first up over 1,200, then came,
that's right,
then came back. And I think Cliffy Brown said I may have been a bit soft on him. And it was a weaker race, I reckon, and they didn't go that quick, which allowed him to stay in touch, and he's got a very good finish on him. I don't think he's suited this year. Rothfire, you still want to see the Rothfire of old, which I'm not sure we're going to.
He sort of got emptied out in that Golden Rose, got injured when he was a $1.55 favourite.
Zoo Style had a picket fence as a young horse, got had a spell, came in, he won a couple of races last prep, controlling the races, and was, well, he broke 56 seconds at the Sunshine Coast when he won there. I don't think he's going to get his own way here.
He did trial well.
Yeah.
Away game trialled well.
Yeah, she's a terrific
mare. She could just stalk them and have the last crack.
Yeah. He's got the blinkers on for the first time.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, just a race I'm not rushing to bet in, but I'm certainly fascinated by the race.
I'm fascinated. I think Coolangatta could be really smart. Her trial was outstanding.
Well, wait and see. I want to see her under pressure.
All right, so that's the McEwen. Let's find a couple of bets, Turfy. Race six, it's a wide-open race here, the Atlantic Jewel, 1,200 metres for the three-year-old fillies.
All from all over the joint.
I've got a pretty strong opinion here.
Have you?
Yeah.
Good on you.
I think Lady Laguna wins.
Me too. As you know, I was keen on her first up.
Yep.
And was she ridden a bit close the other day? Was that?
Oh, I think they've got to go forward again.
Yeah.
There's not much speed here.
No, I'm much happier them going forward in a race like this than they were first up on that bone dry track. She'll be better for that run. She's just going to get this lovely run head, isn't she? And, you know, a lot of these horses that are considered chances are coming from maidens and races of that ilk. I mean, Va Via, which ran at Moonee Valley first up and didn't really have much luck the way the race was run there. But I think, I'm not sure about the old filly's form from the autumn, but at least she's coming. I think it's stronger form on paper than some of the ones we're giving chances to.
The key for mine is the map. I'm loving you beat Lady Laguna home last time out, but Lady Laguna went hard, was the only one of the on-paces to stick on, and she's going to get a soft time up on speed. I think I'm loving you'll get buried away back on the inside. The scratching of Queen of the Ball really helps Lady Laguna.
Yeah.
Benny Mellum is such a good jockey.
No, I'm with you with Lady Laguna. I think I'm loving you'll run well from a good draw.
Portray was the other one that interests me a little bit down the bottom now that she's got a start.
I thought there were a couple down the bottom that showed ability in weaker races. She might have been one of them. You know, I don't think it can win. But Barry Bubbly sort of went
hit the line well.
Went all right the other day, but those horses...
They can hit so far back.
Those horses kill you, you know, following them.
All right, Keen Lady Laguna. Let's quickly wrap this up. Couple of bets later in the card, and I've got one in the open. The Chautauqua Stakes. Gee whiz, 550 the field. Have you got an opinion?
It's a very, very tough race. I ended up with Wunderbar on top, that mare from up north. Had a lot of racing, terrific in the Missile, but, you know, I don't know if had a Missile. I mean, was a 100-to-1 winner of that particular race. I thought she'd run well in a race where I don't really want to play. I know we keep saying that at these sorts of meetings.
Yeah, you've sat on the fence a lot. At least we've given out Lady Laguna. Yeah. I'm going to give another one, an OTI double on the day.
Hello.
Race one.
Yeah, I know who you're going to call. The thing that went on the synthetic.
Yeah. I think just Stork's Major Bill, who I think's a query at 1,500 metres, and I think Big Story will get the better late.
It was every now and then you do see one on the synthetic.
I reckon
I reckon Atlantic Jewel won it on debut on the synthetic.
The Geelong synthetic.
Yeah,
Mark Cavanagh and Lindsay Park used to take a lot of their good horses down to the Geelong synthetic to debut.
Which no longer exists.
Well, they jump out on it.
Yes, oh, good on them.
But the Pakenham synthetic's racing beautifully. I'd happily, if I was lucky enough, if I was lucky enough to have a good horse, I'd take it to the Pakenham to debut.
The Pakenham grass track is a beauty as well.
Certainly is. Anything else on the card standing out before we have a chat to Tristan?
No, not for me. No.
All right.
It's a very, very conservative day for me.
Chips in Lady Laguna. I'm keen Big Story in the opener.
Yes, I'm with you on Big Story, actually. I was
a little bit worried you said TB declared it immoral.
He did last night, and I went back and watched it. I do actually remember. I didn't pay much attention to it, but I did actually pull out the video when I got home last night. I thought, by jingo, you're going somewhere.
Well, let's have a chat to Tristan.
Having a bet on sport this week? Top this.
Whether you're into cricket and curling or golf and greyhounds, Top Sport will let you on for plenty. And with literally hundreds of markets from your own backyard to the international stage, Top Sport has you well covered. So if you want to get the top odds every time, bet with Top Sport.
Top that. Download the app today. Top Sport. Feel the excitement.
Don't let the game play you. Stay in control. Gamble responsibly.
A look from the book. Presented by Top Sport.
Time now to welcome our good friend Tristan Merlihan from Top Sport. Tristan, how's things up on the Gold Coast?
Yeah, really nice, boys. It's been a big day of racing last weekend. We've got plenty of good activity, Sydney and Melbourne. Hopefully the weather stays away and you get a good day of racing on good tracks.
We've got a couple of small fields in the features down at the Valley, the McEwen Stakes and also the Fian. As a bookie, do you like small fields? Can you build your book better or do you prefer to have a big field that you can really attack?
A bit of both. Like from our perspective, when you're looking at the McEwen, you got Cool and Gatter as the $2.20 favourite. So, and also in the theme, we got Mr. Brightside as $2. So if you had to put both of those in, and then you know you're sort of trying to put your foot on one or two of the rougher ones and just make a book. So from my perspective, I like the smaller races, but you know the big fields also. You know, punters can probably have three or four cracks at it when it's a wider range of odds and get a winner there. So it's just a different mentality when you're setting the markets.
Let's find out where the early money's gone. We've got wet tracks in both Sydney and Melbourne at this stage, but are there a couple that punters have latched onto in the first couple of days of betting?
Yeah, the main one they've come for is in race 8 at Moonee Valley, Uncle Bryn. It's been smashed. $2.50 to $2.35, which takes a bit to move at that price. We've laid in each price point, $2.50, $2.40, $2.35. So punters are expecting in race 8 the favourite to be too good.
He was outstanding.
Yes, oh, you've got a grin like a Cheshire cat you have because I know he's your best and you're sort of in love with the horse.
Wow, the little query is he's probably going to drift back off speed.
Oh, well, he can't win then.
He can still win because he's a very good horse. He was home
super. Did you say good horse then?
Well, that's what you do, so I'm just copying you. I'm trying to be more like you.
Don't.
Dangerous, isn't it? Yes, it might get me fired. Let's talk about the lay of the day. Now, once again, last week you took on the popular elect in Aft Cabin. Never, ever looked like winning.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
He ran well.
He never looked like winning, though.
I was quite happy for him to get beat because I laid him myself. But having said that, I'd be following Aft Cabin wherever he goes.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Actually, I had a chat to James Cummings on Friday last week. What a magnificent person he is.
You're a bigger name dropper you are than Friends of the Earth. Hey, tell us.
No, but he just on Aft Cabin, I would agree with you. Stick with him. Yeah. He was extremely bullish. I think once he gets up to the Caulfield Guineas, he's going to be right in the mix again.
Okay, who are you laying this week? Who's the one?
Yeah, I'm going the last race of the day. I just think the favourite there at the moment is Attractable, and I'm just not sure it should be the favourite of the race. Obviously, the Jamie Carr-Moody connection is one that you don't want to oppose too often, but I thought Unusual Culture probably was the one that was going to be too good. So, I just think 420 in a wide open field, I'll certainly be putting the favourite of everything in the last and hoping we can get a good result to finish today.
And we're a couple of weeks sort of into the early part of the spring carnival. Tristan, what are you seeing turnover-wise? How's turnover going year on year? Last year, this time of year, we were sort of the eastern states, particularly New South Wales and Victoria, were in lockdown. But how are things trending?
Turnover has been down this year, which I think was to be expected. I think, as you say, with lockdown, with a change in dynamics of everything, and we've obviously had to make a few changes on the back of the increase in POC, so we've been actively trying to reduce turnover, which we never want to do, but we have done that effectively. It's dropped by about 30-odd%, so it's something we're not wanting to have to continue, but whilst those sort of impacts are in the marketplace at the moment, just got a little bit cautious, and we have to sort of just try to keep our margins where they are at the moment.
Multi.
Yeah. I'm
surprised this segment's still in the show, to be honest.
I'll kick off, yes, the multi. This has got a very, very, in fact, it's the lay of the day, the multi. I'm going to stick with that filly in the OTI colours who I thought was ridden, maybe a little bit touched to the lead at. Well, do you want to say it then?
Well, it's my selection. I thought you'd forgotten its name for a second.
No, I was saying, a bit of a preamble there was that I thought she was ridden a little bit close at Caulfield. But it may suit her better in a race like this at Mooney Valley. And that is Lady Laguna in the Atlantic Jewel. Matthew, what is yours?
Are you going the win or the place?
No, the place. The place. Rock solid.
Let's get Paul's. Who's Paul going with?
I don't want to do it, to be honest. I've kind of fallen out of love, not only with, talking to you two every week, but this... This, Mooney Valley on Saturday, doing the form last night and... I don't know. I'm just going
to... Hey, spit it out. We don't want to talk about, how difficult it is for you at home trying to do the form.
Tell us difficult sitting next to you every Thursday and talking to you as well.
We understand that.
Shalaman, the place.
Thank you.
Zero confidence.
It's about $1.45 pop, isn't it?
I still on that zero confidence, which means it's probably going to win. So
I'm going to go with the horse you mentioned had all the early support in Uncle Bryn. I think if you can make ground on Saturday.
The win. Oh, you got it. It was 6-4.
He'll be winning.
6-4. How old are you?
Tristan knows what I mean. 6-4.
Yeah.
$2.50.
Yeah, $2.50. It is actually turfy, but anyway. It's,
when they brought the decimals in.
Three. No, sure. don't.
Challenge the place. Race 6-4, Lady Laguna the place. It's 6-4 the place. And then Uncle Bryn at $2.35. The multi-dividend works out at $8.50. So
Tris. It cannot lose. Oh. But before we move on, I'm reliably told our producer walked in last week. Now, Turf had the hearing aids down at the time and declared two of Peter Moody's horses a dead set certainty. They both lobbed, I'm told.
And I missed out.
So... A, the good news is that Turf missed out. B, the good news is that Roger, our producer, and I didn't miss out. But I'm told, Tris, that unfortunately for you, that some of Roger's bets may have been with Top Sport. So I assume it's fish and chips on Saturday night rather than the expensive Asian.
And thanks, too.
We put a big red alarm on his name when he goes and has future bets because he was way too good and he certainly downgraded the dinner selections there on Saturday night.
It's fair to say that he'd done good.
Yeah, I wasn't here for that. I clearly missed the boat. But anyway, Tristan, great to chat. Enjoy the weekend. We look forward to catching up again next week.
See you next week, guys.
That's just about all we've got time for on today's show. Paul, rumblings?
What have you got, Captain Miserable? Just when I see I'm going to ignore him. Crowd's down. I know this is not a massive talking point yet. We're one Saturday into the spring carnival. For the MRC to be 18% down year on year.
That's on 2019 crowds.
On a nice day.
On a beautiful day with good fields.
Great track.
And a good track, that is of significant concern, not to so much the MRC and the Valley who don't rely on as much crowds as, say, the VRC, but to say those numbers are replicated come the Spring Carnival, the Melbourne Cup Carnival, that is of significant concern.
What I will say, though, turnover was up. We were dealing off a soft six as opposed to a good four last year. And hard lockdowns last year. So that's a super result.
It does reflect AFL. Does reflect AFL trends where crowds are down. The broadcast is still popular. Quickly before we go, the Fian. The Valley clearly unhappy with the field, small fields for Saturday. I still think there will be a big chance to move next year. The Valley will push for that. Now, the Tab app, you said on air on Monday night. Are you laughing at me, Turf? This is an important story.
As soon as you mention anything to do with the TAB, anything's possible.
No, but it's an important story because they are so crucial to the funding model of racing in Australia, not only in Victoria.
I haven't realised that, though, recently.
No, that their app, they're much, their app at the moment is needs significant uplift. Now, this much spruced app, I'm told, has some issues, and it'll be fascinating, Matthew. I think you and I might have some mail from different people, which is always a good sign that the much spruced app might not launch in time.
Is it true that they were trying to launch the world's first steam-operated app?
That was a good three, presented by Racing.com and Top Sport.